Cannabis Business Minds, we train and mentor professionals, entrepreneurs, and aspiring entrepreneurs on how to confidently find their place in the legal cannabis and hemp industries. Come on and join us at CannabisBusinessMinds.com.
Market Report, where did you make your journey in?
Right. So I started covering cannabis really back in 2013 when I was still working at thestreet.com. And back then, really mainstream media was not covering cannabis. And it was still, there's a lot of stigma. And even when I was working on that at The Street, you know, the attitude was, well, you can do it at the end of the day when you've got all your other work done. And I really felt like it was such a huge business story and that they were really missing an opportunity. And that's when I broke out and started freelancing. And then as I was freelancing with other outlets like Forbes and Seeking Alpha and whoever, that they still weren't covering it the way I wanted to cover it. So that's when I started Green Market Report. And I did that in 2017. I co-founded it with Cynthia Salarizada and Vince Patetti.
Yeah. Okay. So it's been since 2017. And I think the biggest thing is, there's a huge accomplishment. You've sold your company. That's amazing. As a woman in cannabis, like I'm so excited just to talk about that process. But even getting to that point, you withstood a pandemic. You are in you're a media company. It's hard to get kind of traditional revenue streams, but you never seeked out capital. And so it's interesting because I always talk about, well, if you're in cannabis along the supply chain, you definitely need to have access to capital. But if you're ancillary, there are ways, and you are a testimony to it, that you can manage a business in a way that allows you not to necessarily get outside funding.
Well, we had a couple of conversations with people. We were turned down. And interestingly enough, one of the companies I had just casual conversations with had lent to a competitor of mine. And I thought, well, that shows that they're willing to invest in media. And they turned me down, even though my model was almost identical to this male-run cannabis media company, which is now out of business. So they got investments of millions of dollars and they're out of business.
Oh, God.
You know, and that just tells you a lot right there, that it's really hard as a woman to raise capital. You can have an identical balance sheet and your male counterparts raise millions and you get turned down. Yeah. And I hear that all the time from a lot of women. So, you know, the good part though about being turned down was it forced me to be successful. I mean, it forced me to do that. That's one of the mistakes that you see a lot of these companies that do raise millions of dollars, that they just feel like they've got this, you know, full bank account and they kind of lose track of, I do need to make a profit. I do need to make sure my income is coming in. In my case, I just had, you know, failure was not an option. I had to get money in and I had to make this work, or I needed to do something else because I had a mortgage to pay. I was putting my son through college.
You want to retire? Like, there's all of these things, right? It's survive and retire. Yeah. It's like all of these.
I just, you know, I had bills to pay. And you're right. Media is an atrociously difficult industry to be in. It's incredibly difficult to have a smooth revenue stream.
Yeah.
It's a hard industry to describe to investors. Most of them don't get it. They don't understand it. It's very simple to go to an investor and say, I have this widget that I'm making, or this edible I'm making, because they see it, they can feel it, they can touch it. Data companies, maybe a little bit easier of an effort, but yeah, media, really hard to sell to investors.
Yeah. Is it because media is the big thing is engagement, impressions, and the touch points? Like, I guess, can we just unpack quickly, like the different revenue streams? I would think about like some sponsored whatever post movement where dollars are coming in from a client to get whatever they have in front of your viewers. Like is that the biggest or the most traditional type of revenue stream that you would have?
That is certainly a model you can pursue. And there are a couple of companies pursuing that model. What happens with sponsored content is it gets really hard for the reader to understand what is news and what is sponsor content. A lot of these companies that are doing sponsor content in cannabis are not very upfront about what they're doing. And so on my side, which is the financial world, that gets a little confusing for investors who are trying to do their research, because they might read that company XYZ is this wonderful, amazing company because this website is saying so. But they don't know that that company has paid for that story to say that they're amazing. And that's where it starts to get muddled. We did do a little bit of sponsor content during the pandemic, because I just had to. My back was against the wall. My original revenue source was events, because as I was building my website, I didn't have the impressions or user numbers that would warrant big advertising campaigns. I was a startup, so I had to build my audience. And in the beginning, I didn't have the numbers to go out and buy, sell advertising. So I did events. And that's what a lot of cannabis, a lot of media companies do. You see this with the Wall Street Journal and Bloomberg and the New York Times. They have events that people pay to go to. And so that's a big revenue stream. When COVID happened, I lost all that. That was gone. And so I had to pivot to advertising. The good part about it was by then I had kind of built up my audience. And so it was an easier sell for my advertising people.
Oh, absolutely. Well, and it's interesting because that is, you want to trust media. And I think we've figured out in just non-cannabis, just in general, when you're like, wait, what am I, who's writing this? Like, why are all the local news in all of these states very similar? And, you know, it's really important to, when you are reading something, to be like, is this objective? And I think that we've lost that a little bit where, you know, it's harder to ascertain that. And so that's a really good, a very, very good point. I invited somebody on my podcast. I had my assistant do it and they're like, is this pay to play? And I was like, no, it's not pay to play. Like, this is just an interview. And so I think that perhaps, do you know, because this has been you were, you know, doing other financial kind of work before cannabis, but is that along every industry where there is sponsored content, or is it much higher in the cannabis industry?
It's everywhere. Even when I worked at the street, we used to do a video series that American Express sponsored about small business.
Okay.
And again, very, very transparent. This is sponsored by American Express.
Yeah.
And that's really kind of the general rule of thumb, is it's understandable and it's okay and it's accepted if you're very transparent about it and you tell the readers kind of up at the top that this is
sponsored,
you know, a guest contribution or something of that, you know, that tips the reader off. Some people do it at the very bottom. I think that's a little disingenuous, but that's just me.
Yeah.
Because what happens is, does the reader get all the way to the bottom, and then do they see, oh, by the way, this has been paid for content,
right? Like, I spent 15 minutes reading this and, oh, okay,
I didn't realize this was a commercial. It is tough. I will say that now that I have been acquired, and I was acquired by Crane Communications, that likely in the future, maybe sometime in the summer, I'll probably start to put up a paywall and start to charge, because that's the other revenue stream area.
Yeah.
You're either doing events, you're doing banner ads, or you're doing a subscription model. And I think in media in general, people have learned to accept that, like, oh, I get three free stories and then I got to start to pay.
Yeah.
Or I'm going to only get a blurb from this story. And if I want to read more, I got to pay. So I think that people are more accepting of that. And that's likely where we'll go, because again, ad campaigns are great. But they're very lumpy for someone running a company. It's like, oh, I got a big chunk in April, but then I didn't get any more for a couple months. Oh, and then I got a big chunk this month. It's very, very bumpy. Whereas if you have subscriptions, you kind of have a
predictable
process. You can plan budgets and such.
Oh, totally. And then if you have subscriptions, then you can say, okay, well, I need to hopefully acquire this many new readers. You assess your churn, and then you have a much more predictable model. Yeah. And it's cool, because what I think, and tell me if you've seen this since like 2017, more and more people are understanding and wanting to start in cannabis. So have you noticed a just trend in new readers because of the trend in openness to cannabis, right? Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's like more and more states keep popping up. Have you seen that with your business?
Yeah, we've definitely seen an increase in readership. We've had an increase in people subscribing to our free newsletter right now. Some of our competitors have gone out of business. They didn't survive the pandemic. And we did. We did everything we could and managed to live through, which was great because as I said, we got acquired. And honestly, at one point during the pandemic, I was ready to just throw in the towel. It was so stressful and I was so burned out and I had founder fatigue. And I just at a certain point I was like, well, I might as well just hang on and see if I can just keep this going. So I kind of lost where we were at, but as far as like the subscribers, it has gone up. I think to your point, as more states legalize, more people see it in their cities and towns, they see the dispensaries and such, and they get very interested because now it's like right in front of them.
Exactly. Right. It's like right in front of them. They're curious. And I think also with the great resignation, I think a lot of entrepreneurs, soon to be entrepreneurs, are like, what can I do? And I mean, I've just noticed it with the podcasts and people taking my courses. So I just thought probably you would see it too. But let's talk about you getting acquired, because when I saw this on LinkedIn, I was like, I was so happy. I was like, oh my gosh, I can't believe it. I can believe it. And I can't believe it. It's so awesome that, you know, I had talked to you last year. I think it was right before the pandemic truly started. And we were just talking about business. And had you always planned on going, like getting acquired, or like, had you thought about that when you started your company?
That was one of our exit goals was to get acquired. And truly my preferred exit was with another media company so that I could continue with Green Market Report and use their resources. Cause that was one of the problems I was starting to hit as well, is I was having trouble competing with a Business Insider or Politico because they just had so many resources. And the person doing that reporting wasn't also doing the accounting and the social media and the editor-in-chief and content and the video. And I was doing everything. I had 10 hats I was wearing. Yeah. Whereas my competitors were like, oh, I just have to do a story or two a day. Oh, that's easy. Yeah. So that was my preferred exit.
Yeah.
We had, like I said, we had talked to a few investors. My problem with that strategy was that, okay, so if somebody does give me money, and I take investor money, I'm still going to have to go and buy these resources that if I was acquired by a media company, I wouldn't have to go buy. They would already have that.
You could leverage.
So that was where I was facing that same challenge of, okay, so I get this money, but now I still have to go out and hire these people and buy this software and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
But with Crane buying me, like even the other day I said, I want to look at doing some award ceremony at the end of the year. You know, do you have any kind of like award nomination program? Oh yeah, we got that. Bingo. That's exactly why, you know, that's one of the things that I had wanted to achieve with this, with being acquired. So I was just thrilled that it was a great company that wanted to acquire me, that they're known for their journalism. They're known for making money at journalism, which is rare. They're a privately owned, family run company.
Yeah.
So it just ticked off all the boxes. I hadn't even considered Crane. I was looking at other people and when they approached me, I was like, oh my gosh, sure.
Let's talk about that, because this is where I think a lot of entrepreneurs, let's say they've built something, maybe it's valuable. They might not know what assets they truly have in their company that is worth something, getting a valuation of their company. And then even knowing after they've done that, because there's a lot of ducks to get in order, right? You have to have done your financials. You've had to do your accounting. You have to not only have that pitch, but you have to say, like, I've got this many readers, whatever your assets are that they're acquiring. Can you walk us through just like that process for you? And then the network, right? Like how do, so you could be ready, but if nobody knows about what you, that you're ready to be sold or that you're ready to have that discussion, you know, how does one go about that?
Well, I think that, like you said, the first thing you have to do is have your house in order. Luckily I had done that from the very beginning. I had an accountant that did my books quarterly. I found her through Upwork.
Amazing, right?
Upwork is amazing. And she was amazing. So I have my books were pristine and in great shape.
Yeah.
So that when someone did approach me, it's like, here, here's all that. Also had your legal house figured out, because that's the next thing is, okay, well, who are your partners and what are your contracts look like with these partners? And has anybody lent you any money? And so you have to have all that really buttoned up. You have to be on the same page with those partners if you have partners, which I'm assuming most people that are entrepreneurs do have partners of some sort. Mm-hmm. You have to be on the same page that you want the same exit. That's where some of these conflicts come into play, because someone might not want to sell and someone may want to sell.
Yeah.
You also have to do your homework on, like you said, your valuation. What are you worth? You have to look around the market. That's where I think also a lot of people see, these announcements that company XYZ sold for $10 million. And you're like, oh my God, I'm like company XYZ. I'm worth $10 million. Cool. You often don't know what's actually happening behind the scenes behind that headline, because a lot of times these headlines are embellished and fluffed up. And there may be no cash on the table with that deal. It may be a stock only deal.
Yeah,
I'm not downplaying stock only deals, but you don't
know
what
cash
stock's going to get worth, you know? Yeah. So you need to know what you're worth. I actually had another offer on the table before Crane had come to me, and I personally, like, my intuition, my gut was telling me the price wasn't great.
Yeah.
They were really pressuring me to make a decision. And I kept saying, you know, I'm not that desperate. I don't need to lowball myself. And that was super stressful, because like I said, I had founder fatigue. I was coming out of COVID. I was broke. I was tired. I was just stressed out and drained. And so then to have somebody approach me and go, hey, we'd like to invest in you and buy part of your company and blah, blah, blah. And you can have these earnouts later, and you have the potential to make all this money, and we're going to help you. And my gut just kept saying, let's just press the brakes on this. And thank goodness I did press the brakes on it, because a better deal came along, because I did know that if I'd done that deal, I would have really undersold myself, dramatically undersold myself.
And there's no coming back from that.
Like, no, you're done.
No coming back from that. Yeah, that's very, very good.
And one of my partners had even said that. She was like, what are you thinking? This is not a good price.
Yeah.
And I was like, but it's the only one we've gotten, and these people had CVs that were really impressive. These were impressive people. It would have been an impressive team, but they were lowballing me.
Yeah. Yeah. It reminds me of that old game show, Deal or No Deal. And you're like, I don't need to decide right away. Right. And I think it's such a good sales technique if you're on that opposite side, where it's like, put in urgency. But when you have worked so hard to build a company, that's the last thing that you really want to do. And I can understand how it would be easy to almost want to go that way when you're like, okay, there's kind of this option. So at that point, had you let your network know that you were interested in having a different relationship with a potential investor? Like, how did you even frame it? Because it was an acquisition.
Yeah. So it's interesting. I actually, in both those cases, I was approached by people, which is, it's interesting, because it's definitely way more ideal, because you are in a position of power, because they have reached out to you, not you to them. If you go to them and say, You know, if I would have gone to CNBC and said, hey, CNBC, you really want to buy me, don't you? It doesn't come off as great. If CNBC had come, hey, Deborah Borchardt, wow, we really love Green Market Report, but we want to buy you. Now, all of a sudden, I'm in a good position. To your point, how do you attract those offers? You know, again, it kind of goes back to if you've got a really good product, you will attract attention. If you've done a consistent product with consistent quality, you get on people's radar. It's I believe it's truly that simple.
I mean, and you do deliver amazing content. And I just looked at your website. I haven't, it's funny, I'm on your newsletter, but I haven't read one for a while. And I like just
open that newsletter.
I know. I will give you those opens. But the website is just like so impressive. And I think you're 100% right. If you're delivering something good and it's consistent, because I think a lot of entrepreneurs, if they're balancing so many things and they cannot consistently deliver, if there may be more of the online, that's, it's hard for listeners to feel, you know, like they're loyal. And if people are watching and people are watching, they can probably see that too. Do you think it also has to do with your presence in social, on social media, or just your presence elsewhere besides the product that you're delivering?
So that is a really great point. And I think you're absolutely right. Like we were saying, if you do have a great product, let's say you're Nancy Whitehead from Wana Brands, which she just recently did a massive, huge deal where she agreed to sell her company. And it, for a very, very generous number, she had a great product that attracted attention. People knew her product though. It was a leader in its category. She worked really hard to get it to become a leader in that category. And I think that that's the key, is who's going to know your product from Adam if you don't go out there and promote it and do everything you can to get it into the public eye. If you can't afford a PR firm, and PR firms are expensive. If you can't afford a PR firm, then you've got to really hustle to get your brand out there, whether you're speaking at conferences or you're doing a lot of social media posting, you're posting on LinkedIn. LinkedIn is a great place to post articles or opinion stories or anything of that nature. There are so many ways to get your product, company, brand, whatever, out into the world for people to take notice. Look, it's a lot of hustle for sure.
It's a lot of hustle.
I mean, I hustled like crazy, and I've done plenty of things where I've driven hours to be at a, at an event for one day and stayed at a cheap Airbnb that was awful, to save money, or slept on someone's couch or something, just so that I could keep making these appearances and keep doing this hustle. Cause I did not, I mean, my partner did do PR. And I have PR friends that helped when I desperately needed it. But for the most part, no, it was just a lot of hustle.
And it's so funny because we just in this space have so many hurdles. We can't do traditional, like, well, let's run a Facebook ad.
Right.
Or let's do any of that stuff. So it really is showing up on the radar in events. You're absolutely right. Did you dabble into Clubhouse in the pandemic? Like, did you find that as a good source? Because I never did.
I know the cannabis
industry did.
I got into it a little bit in the beginning, and then I found it to be just a part of my French, but a cluster F. It just was like, you got into these rooms with 40 people.
Yes.
And people are jockeying to talk, or you didn't get to talk at all. You're just sitting there listening to people. And I was like, well, this is a huge waste of my time. I kind of felt like too, people were just rambling. I got turned off by it, and I kept feeling like, you know, when events come back, Clubhouse is going to like disappear in 2 seconds. And I eventually just took the app off my phone.
Me too. Yeah. It was like, I agree. They did a really great launch strategy. where you were taught, where people were talking about it, where you wanted that invite, where you wanted to like really be part of the first early adopters. And then I completely agree with you. Then after a while, I was just like, it was almost like podcasts, like just listening to a podcast.
But yeah. And that exactly. And that's where I felt like a few people were doing well with it, but it was almost the same thing. It was like, okay, well, so I could really go to Spotify and listen to a podcast. Why am I on this thing?
Yeah, no, absolutely. So let's talk a little bit about, just as we're kind of thinking about the future and kind of where you are with this acquisition. So it's all gone through, but you're clearly maintaining ownership. Are you creative? Like, how did your role change from that acquisition?
My deal was technically referred to as an acqui-hire, which is an acquisition hire. So there's a new little phrase for you. I hadn't even really heard that before, but it was an acqui-hire. So yeah. I was acquired and a hired. I don't own any part of the company anymore. They bought it lock, stock, and barrel. Mm-hmm. I was given the role of executive editor. Okay. So technically I am an employee of Crane Communications now. Yeah. But I run Green Market Report, but I have people that I do report to. Yeah. Which honestly has been really helpful, because up to this point, I've been kind of doing a lot of this on my own and with a few contract helpers. So to have like Pulitzer Prize winning journalists, you know, give me suggestions or ideas has been fantastic. So yeah. I've really welcomed, you know, my new benevolent overlords, as I call them. You know, I'm still learning their processes, but it's really exciting. You know, they're so redoing their Crane Chicago website. So I will migrate Green Market Report onto their platform probably sometime this summer. So in the meantime, we're just keeping the website the way it is. But I look forward to that, because we had grown quite a bit from where we started in 2017.
Yeah.
And I was running into that issue too with the website, is I needed to update my website. I needed to design it. There were things that weren't working that worked 4 years ago.
Yeah.
And that was going to be a lot of money. I didn't have that money to hire software designers to redesign Green Market Report. So to have my new owners do that is just huge.
It is. And I think that, where do you find your biggest passion? It's writing, it's content, it's interviewing, or is it, you know, what is it? Because you want to, for me, I always think you really do want to align with what drives the most passion. And when you wear that entrepreneur hat, there's a lot of stuff that maybe doesn't always drive it for you. What is that passion? And,
you know, that's a great question, because when this acquisition happened, they actually asked me that. They said, do you want to run the business side of it, or do you want to be on the creative side of this? And I was like, you know, I've done the business side. I did a fine job at it. It's not what I want to do.
Yeah.
And I'd rather stay on the creative side. I like the aspect of telling stories, and I felt like that was really my contributions to Green Market Report made it unique and special. And that was the special sauce, was me. Yeah. So I felt like if I took me out of the creative content, it was going to lose its draw and its uniqueness. Yeah. And so that's why I opted to stay on that side.
And I think that anybody listening needs to hear that, because it's okay to just lean into your passion and do that. And I think when people jump from being really good at what they were doing, maybe in a corporate career, to, hey, I've noticed that I can start my own business, that there are all of these areas that don't come naturally to us. And being able to either outsource it to a point, or if, you know, you're lucky, you like Deborah, like to go through the acquisition and say, you know what, that really is where I shine, what I'm good at. That's being authentic to ourselves. And just, I mean, it's nice here, because sometimes I think, oh my God, like, I hate doing this admin stuff. I'm not the best editor, right? And, you know, maybe I shouldn't be doing that. And it's important for people to realize that.
I think it's also important to try as much as you can to pull your ego out of the decision-making process, because there is a certain amount of ego that goes with, oh, I'm the CEO, you know, and isn't that awesome? I'm a, and, and And it does help with your resume. I mean, that is something that someone had told me in the past was, look, if you start your own business and you put on your resume, now you're the CEO, that changes the way people look at you.
Yeah.
Even if you're the CEO of a dinky little company, you're still, you were the CEO.
Yeah.
And that comes with certain responsibilities. And, you know, I'm of a certain age where it's like, I don't need that title to make me feel good.
Mm-hmm.
But some people get caught up in that and they get caught up in the title thing. To your point, I was more concerned with what do I want out of my life and my quality of life?
Yeah.
And the title thing doesn't, that just wasn't a part of the formula. It is for a lot of people though. And I think that's really, you know, one of the pieces of advice I can give is don't get so caught up in that title thing, you know, really focus more on what, to your point, what you said, your passion and what you want to do that makes you happier. And, you know, the title stuff is sometimes just nonsense.
Oh my God. It's so nonsense. It's so ego. I remember right when I started the cannabis industry, I was on, it was pretty cool. I got to be on NPR and it was 2015. And my title was, because I was like, you can just invent these. And it was like strategic thinker, outside of the box, strategic thinker, something like that. And the guy, and it was really long. He's like, is that really your title? I was like, yeah, it's my title. And he was like, okay. And so to your point, it's just a label. You can choose what your label is, but I think it's how you show up every day of whatever you're doing. And yeah, for me at the end of the day, it doesn't matter anymore. Like at all, I think it really relates to your goals. And for you, what are your goals now? You know, like when you think about painting, we're about to be in 2022. This episode's probably dropping in 2022. So we're already in 2022. You know, what are your goals for the upcoming 12 months? And then, you know, when you think about even the 3-year landscape, like what is it that you want to accomplish?
Yep. So I'm actually working on my editorial calendar now.
Cool.
So we're hoping to stage at least 3 events next year and get back to the event calendar. I know cannabis events can get very crowded, but we think that ours tend to target and get away from the whole general kind of cannabis type of event and really hone in on a specific topic. So we're going to have one on women, one on tech, and one on finance. And they won't be massive like MJ Biz type stuff. It's just going to be 100 to 150 people. So people can really make connections and network and really meet other people. When you get into these massive events where it's over 10,000 people, or really, you know, over 3,000 people, you're only hanging out with the people you know.
Yep.
You're walking around with your business associates. You're not really networking with people you don't know. And so that's not what I want to do. And then we're going to start to do these lists. Like I said, I'm going to be able to use the Crane software to do lists where people can nominate whoever for an award. We will start to charge for a processing fee. So that's going to be another revenue stream for us.
Awesome.
And that's kind of something that's accepted in a lot of journalism awards and whatever is that you pay an application fee to process that.
Yeah.
So we're going to do that. And that's really been my, and then again, we'll have the big switch over to the new website sometime this summer. So that'll be a big focus. So there'll be a lot happening in 2022. I would say, again, looking at the next 3 years, it will be more of that, probably adding more writers. We're going to be launching a psychedelics newsletter in March. I'm going to be at South by Southwest moderating a panel.
Awesome.
And so we're going to do a soft launch of a new psychedelics newsletter in January and then do more of a full court press in March. So we'll be expanding that side of our coverage as well. And then honestly, 5 years from now, I'd love to retire. That's kind of my goal, is I would like to get my house paid off, retire, and not fully quit working, but dial it down
a little.
Because again, it's, you know, we're only given one life, and I'm just not one of those people that really just wants to work till I go into the ground.
Yeah.
I do want to try to enjoy life. So those are my goals. We'll see if I get my personal goal of 5 years in retirement, we'll see if that works.
It's all about, girl, but the good thing is, like, you know about the numbers. It's all about the numbers. It's all about, right? And to me, it's like, it's just kind of working backward there. And who knows, especially what the cannabis industry is going to be like. And there could be so many other opportunities that might just pop up on,
right,
on your platter and allow you maybe in 4.5 to do that, because
Who knows? You can't meet your goal unless you identify your goal.
No, absolutely. I have a whole session on this. Like, I think where people fail with goals, it's okay. SMART goals is one thing: specific, measurable, attainable, relevant, timely. But it's really then like breaking it out and being like, okay, well, what are the potential blockers? How am I going to actually do this every month? And it's getting a little bit more technical to it. That's always my approach, because it applies a little bit more logic. I'm a huge believer, though, of like the law of attraction and like setting stuff out to the universe. But I really think it needs to match with like the realities of certain things. Like, could I actually achieve it? Because, yeah, just saying like, I'm going to do something. Well, how are you going to do it? I think is that big thing. What's your approach to goal setting?
Well, I think that's the first thing is clearly identifying it. Mm-hmm. You know, when you talk to people that say, well, I want to work in the cannabis industry. Well, what exactly do you want to do? Well, I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, you're never going to get a job in the cannabis industry with, I don't know. You have to know what you want in order to achieve it. And I think that's the hardest thing for all of us is identifying that thing that we want. And
yes,
you can't get it until you know what you want. So, you know, for me, like I said, my goal in my exit was ultimately to be acquired by another media company that was larger and had resources. I mean, if I hadn't had that goal in my brain that was what I wanted, I would have never really been able to accomplish it. And yeah. So I think that's really that's just something people have to do within themselves, is to do that soul searching and self-analysis and company analysis to know exactly what you want.
And I think that's the hard part, where a lot of people don't ask themselves, like, what is it that I really want? Do you have any idea why people struggle with that? Is it just awareness, or what do you think it is?
You know, it's really hard for us to be self-reflective.
Mm-hmm.
It might uncover weaknesses that we mm-hmm. don't want to address.
Mm-hmm.
It might uncover something that we don't see ourselves as, you know, maybe we don't self-identify that way. That I feel like is it. I also feel like for a lot of people that get stuck in this world of, I can't decide what I want to do.
Yeah.
They don't go out and maybe try a bunch of different things to just kind of do a process of elimination. And I've had that conversation with other people as well. It's like, if you're just going to fumble around, you're not going to be able to figure out what you like and what you don't like. I mean, that's part of this is the same thing. Okay. So I want to be in the cannabis industry, but I don't know what I want to do. Well, you need to, you know, start going to conferences and learning all the different areas.
Yeah.
Then you need to pick one. Okay. I'm going to work in a dispensary and be a bud tender. It's not with the end all be all, but at least I'm doing something. Well, now that I got in there, I see, oh, wow, they got this cultivation facility in the back. I'm super interested in the horticulture that's happening back there. That's really what I want to do. So now you go, I mean, so it helps you define that path, but a lot of people just don't get on that journey to figure out what they want through that process of elimination of this. I like this. I don't, this. I like this. I don't.
Yeah.
And I think that's also, you know, could be applied to business as well of, okay, well, let's try this. If it's not working, then let's do that. You know?
Yeah. I think it's maybe getting out of our comfort zone, right? Maybe people just don't like the, like, entrepreneurship is getting out of your comfort zone. And when you're in it, you're probably not moving as far or fast as you could be. So maybe it's that. And I always think about like, take some form of action. Don't just listen to like, and I think now, oh my gosh, especially I love your opinion on this is like, we have so much information. All people do now is consume. And at one point it's like decision fatigue, but consumption fatigue. And no action might be taken because there may be like, I don't know if there's a psychological, you know, aspect to this, but like maybe they feel like they've already done something by consuming, learning it.
Of failure. To me, I think it's always that it's people are so afraid to try something because they're afraid they're going to fail. And that's super embarrassing and humiliating to be that in front of your friends and family. You know, so like the example, okay, so you go get a job at a dispensary as a bud tender, you're making $15 an hour, but you're in the cannabis industry and you're learning a lot about it. And I don't know, you screw up or whatever, you become the manager, you screw up, you get fired. And so for a lot of people, they don't look at the experience as well. Okay, I learned that that's not what I want to do within the cannabis industry. I really need to be over here in the corporate side and marketing, you know, I don't know, but I'm just saying, I think people have such a high fear of failure that they don't even attempt it. Look, I never ran a company in my life before doing Green Market Report. I always worked for big corporate entities. Mm-hmm. I always got a paycheck from someone. I loved getting a steady paycheck. I was a very conservative person. In that sense that I liked working for other people. I didn't want to be self-employed. I was the reluctant entrepreneur, as I like to say it. Mm-hmm. But you know, I think even with myself, fear of failure was something I had to overcome.
Yeah.
And thank goodness I just put one foot in front of the other and just kept going. And that's really the hardest thing. And most entrepreneurs will say is just putting one foot in front of the other when things get really, really hard is the biggest accomplishment.
Yeah, absolutely. And I also think, you know, embracing like you have stripes of failure. Everyone does. We failed in a marketing campaign. We failed in maybe a product launch. We talked to somebody in a pitch, but that failure is only going to make us stronger. And when we kind of go back to kind of what do you want in life? Well, you know what? Like, don't we all want to just be a better person? Failure teaches us how to be a better person. Like to say that we have never failed, like that's just every life, every day, I'm probably failing at something, but I don't think of it that way. I think about it like, wow, you know, like back in the corporate thing, like, oh, not your weaknesses. What are your opportunities for growth? Okay. You have an opportunity for growth. And even unpacking that example of like, yeah, you get fired at the dispensary. Well, you can even unpack that so much. Well, maybe you can work on communication. Maybe you're not really great with people. Maybe, you know, there's just so much that we have control over, and our perspective, I think, is such a big one. So, you know, yes, if somebody's listening and you're afraid of failing, know you're going to, and know it's okay, because in the end, like we're not, say, I think about this, we're not doctors in the ER. At least I'm not. Like, I'm, you know, like I'm not a doctor in the ER. Like, I'm not saving anybody's life, and I can fail because my house isn't going to burn down, I think. So it's very interesting.
I think a lot of people in the entrepreneurial world will say you learn a lot more from your failures than you do from your successes.
100%. Yeah. All right. Before we wrap up, I want to do the speed round with you. All right. Okay. I always get that, like, oh, what is it? I changed it from last time we chatted. So, you know, what is one thing that you wish you had told yourself right when you got started in the cannabis industry?
I think that's a tough one, because I think there's a couple of things I wish I would have told myself. But I think the one thing is that it was way harder than I ever thought it would be. I it was way harder.
Yeah. Okay. And then we'll just go down this one. Why was it harder? Because it was for me too, way harder. Do you think it's entrepreneurship or do you think it's cannabis entrepreneurship?
I think it's entrepreneurship in general. You're facing so many pressures. You're facing financial pressures, management mm-hmm. pressures. To your point, you're wearing 10 different hats and maybe five of those hats you're pretty good at, but the other five you suck at mm-hmm. and you don't have any option but to figure it out. And a lot of times you run out of helplines and help calls and you're just stuck on your own. And it can be very lonely because I think some entrepreneurs make the mistake of exposing too much of that on social media. Oh, I'm having such a hard day. This is so hard. Blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a terrible thing to do. It makes you feel good for about 2 minutes to bitch on Facebook or, mm-hmm. or Twitter. It doesn't look good for you as an executive. You exactly. don't look good that way. It's not advisable. Yeah. And I think that's the hardest part is is dealing with those really bad days by yourself. Yeah. And not being able to find people to talk to about those really difficult moments when you're running out of money and you're trying to figure out how to get more money and, or you've made a mistake and done something wrong and you've got to fix it. It just can be super stressful and it can be stressful on your whole family because your family yeah. may be depending on you to bring in certain money. So, I think that's the hardest thing.
Absolutely. Thank you for sharing that because it is lonely as an entrepreneur and our network. I think when you have family that are also entrepreneurs, that's maybe one thing to be able to talk to, but being able to have an open door to other entrepreneurs where you actually feel like you can be vulnerable and you can share those things, you can't go just tell everybody. It's really important. Have you seen something like this in the cannabis industry?
You know, I've had various women's groups. But, again, it needs, you have to keep, if you're going to really, lift your skirt and expose your weaknesses and the things that are challenging and that you're struggling with, in a big group setting, if you're on a call with 30 or 40 other female CEOs or 30 or 40 other cannabis CEOs, and now you're saying, wow, I was down to $5 in my bank account last month and blah, blah, blah.
It's too many people.
Be really careful about what you say in the public realm.
Yeah.
I've had a couple of groups where there were only, 5 to 7 people. And then that was really helpful, to have a safe space to have these conversations in. But again, I really advise people to be super careful about what they say in the public realm, because it does get back to other people. Someone says, oh yeah, this is all, just between us. And then they run off and say, oh my God, I just heard Deborah Borchardt say she only had $5 in her bank account last month. She's about to go under. Oh, you could hear the gossip mill going.
Yeah.
I never said that. That never happened. But
this is an example. Yeah.
You have to be super careful. And that's why I was saying, it can be really lonely because you have to be careful who you confess your struggles with.
Yeah. Right. Maybe that's why you have a coach or if you can have one.
I have a few other CEOs that we are very, very upfront with, but we also, there's a level of trust there because I know that they're not going to go and tell other people,
your biz.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh God. It's so true.
You have to have, and I hate to say this, but you have to have someone you can cry to when you have those days where you're just like, I don't know if I can do this anymore. I need to just go get a job at wherever and take it easy and just, make widgets all day long or put numbers in spreadsheets. I can't do this. It's too stressful. You need to have that person that can get you through that. Cause sometimes that's all you need. And then you go, oh my God, I feel so much better after getting that off my chest. Okay, now I'm going back to work.
100%. You know that curve? Like, oh, the life of an entrepreneur, these ups and these downs, these ups and these downs. Like never. Curve. Yes, like we cannot make decisions based off of maybe one day of it, right? And it's crazy though, because those lows are lows and those highs are so high. It's really trying to find that equilibrium. For you, what is, last question, what is that why? Why the cannabis industry? Why do you wake up every day doing what you're doing before you got acquired, after you got acquired? What's that why for you?
You know, I really am fascinated by watching this industry emerge. I've been in the business world. I was in the securities industry for many years before becoming a reporter. So I've had a lot of exposure to different industries. And to see an industry that's literally brand new and growing from zero, that is what has fascinated me. The fact that it's constantly changing, that it's really dynamic, I just find that amazing. You know, you're not going to go into the snack business and see any new innovations in the snack business. No. But in cannabis, it's constantly changing, whether it's the rules and regs, or, you know, what people can sell and not sell, and all the new product. I mean, it's just always changing. And so that for me is the why. I also really like the people that are in the cannabis industry. Mm-hmm. I covered the fashion industry for a while, and that was awful. It was awful. If anybody's worked in fashion, they'll pretty much concur that the people you work with in the fashion industry, just so condescending and off-putting, and they're all better than you. And you go to a cannabis conference, or you're in the cannabis industry, people are for the most part super nice, super welcoming. And I like that too. I like the people.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, hopefully I can get you on to talk about all the changes in cannabis. Since you are like on the front lines, I'd love to get you on another episode.
Absolutely. I'm always happy to do it.
Cool. Well, thank you so much. And then how can people find you? How can people connect with you?
Absolutely. I'm on LinkedIn. Green Market Report is on www.greenmarketreport.com. It's a free website. Our newsletters are free, so please sign up and subscribe to our newsletter now while it's free.
Yeah.
I'm on Twitter. My handle is @WallenBroad, which for a lot of people, they don't know that the New York Stock Exchange is at the corner of Wall Street and Broad Street in New York City. And so it's kind of a playoff, my Wall Street reporting and being abroad. I love it.
Well, thank you so much for joining. I really enjoyed our conversation.
I did too. Thank you.
Thanks so much for listening to this week's show. Please subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. And if you enjoyed this, leave us a 5-star review. Make sure that you share this episode on your social media and tag us in the Instagram stories. You can find us wherever you go on social media. Just look up Cannabis Business Minds. Have an idea for the show or something that you want to talk about? Shoot us an email at podcast@cannabisbusinessminds.com.